I'm pulling away from the curb because I dropped my son off at school. We all know what that means. It's time for their drive to work. Okay, so today's topic comes from my blog. It's actually, on some level, a very simple topic and a very complex topic. So the question that I got on my blog was, we talk a lot about making gameplay fun. That's important that it's fun. What does that mean? What does fun mean? How do we make things fun? How do we know that something is fun? And that, my friends, is, like I said, on some level simple, on some level very complex. So I'm going to talk about fun today. So let me put some caveats to start with. First off, there are many different types of players who enjoy many different types of things. So what might be fun for one player isn't inherently fun for another player. That's one of the challenges of fun, or gameplay in general, is that your audience appreciates different things, and your audience finds different things fun. So a lot of what I'm going to talk about today are the different kinds of fun that we can put into a set. And like I said, we err on trying to make things fun for the largest audience we can. So there are definitely things that some people find fun. For example, this was known as a griefer. And a griefer takes fun in others' pain. And while we make a little bit of griefer cards, we got to be careful, because those don't tend to be net fun, so we have to be careful with those. Okay, so let's get into fun. Let's talk about what fun is. That's today's topic. So first and foremost, I think most people equate fun with a positive emotional response, usually enjoyment, that I'm doing something and that the act of doing it is a pleasurable thing, that I enjoy doing it, that it is something that and once again, fun can be amorphous at times, but in general, it means I am enjoying the activity that I'm doing, that it is something that I want to keep doing, that I would come back to. So when we examine fun, there's actually a bunch of different kinds of fun. So I'm going to walk through the different kinds of things that can be fun, that are different ways to have an enjoyable experience. So let's start with strategy. Strategy is pretty important. So one of the reasons that a lot of people play games is they like to mentally challenge themselves. One of the things in general is... So my background, for those who don't know, I used to work in entertainment. I was a writer for many years. And that a lot of the philosophy of entertainment applies to game. In fact, I would argue that games are a form of entertainment. So a lot of what I'm talking about today carries over. The one unique thing that's a little different about games from a movie or a book or whatever is that there is a challenge built into it. A lot of times when you're watching a movie or a TV show, it's what they call one-way addressability, meaning they're doing something, you're observing it, you're the observer. And maybe they're evoking things in you, or they're doing things that... But it's more that you're the observer. The thing that's different about games is it's you and the game sort of have a relationship, and when you're interacting with the game, there's an interaction level that a lot of entertainment doesn't have. Not there's some that does. And that interaction's a lot of it. So I talk a lot about iterative loops. When we're designing something, the design iterative loop works as follows. We come up with an idea. We playtest the idea. We get feedback on the idea. We adapt the design based on the feedback. And then we begin the loop again. And the idea is, every time we finish that loop, we learn more about the game and we adapt the game and make the game better. That's a game design iterative loop. But there's also a game playing iterative loop. And a lot of the times, most of the time, there's a strategic component to it. So here's how this works. I do something. I'm going to use drafting as my example, because drafting is just a clean example of an iterative loop. I draft. The first time I draft, I don't know a lot. But the mere act of drafting, I learn things. I learn things I didn't know before. And what that means is, the next time I do it, I've now gotten feedback from my interaction. I've learned something. Often the thing I learn is strategic. meaning I learned, oh, if my goal is to win the game, oh, this card is better than I thought. This mechanic is better than I thought. This card and that card go well together. You know, this theme requires this kind of card, so I should prioritize that. So every time you draft, each time you draft itself is an iterative loop. So once again, you sit down, you draft, you learn things from drafting, you apply that, and then you continue. In the next loop, you are now acting information you got from the previous loops. And that each loop is interesting to you because you get to apply what you learn and try to learn more. That is a strategic iterative loop. Essentially the idea is when you're playing a game, you want, yes, there are sort of larger overall fun things in general, but a lot of what you want is you want to capture individual moments where the player, it's important for the game player to recognize they're getting something, if that makes sense. That a lot of what you want is you want your audience to be aware, like, if the audience is having fun, you want, it's valuable to you, to them to kind of understand why it's fun. You don't want it to be a mystery. You don't want them to play and go, well, I'm enjoying myself, but I don't know why. You want to kind of be in their face about it. And strategic complexity is something that can be, that you play a game, you learn, you play the next game, and you're able to apply it. And that's a lot of fun. A lot of the cool things about games is the idea that I can learn from the experience, it's a mental challenge, and then I can apply what I learned. Now, the same thing is true if you go to, like, sports. Sports is a little more physical. There's a similar quality of, I learned something physical that I can then apply. I learned how to throw something or how to catch or how to be better at something. So there's an iterative thing in sports that's very similar. It's a little more physical, though obviously there's a mental component to sports as well. But anyway, so first and foremost, the idea of fun can be we, the game players, the game designers, put things in that have synergies, that have connectivities, that have themes, that we build stuff that you, the player, have to sort of learn and grow from. And a lot of what we want to do when we design sets is we want to make sure there's a lot of depth there. We want to make sure the first draft you do, you learn something from, and the 10th draft, and the 20th, and the 30th, and the 40th. That ideally what we want is every time you're drafting, the game is deep enough. Now, there are definitely games, by the way. So my example here is Tic-Tac-Toe. Tic-Tac-Toe is a game where early on it's fun. There are iterative loops, you learn things, but you do, like, you can learn all the strategy of something. There is a point with Tic-Tac-Toe where it really isn't fun anymore because there's nothing more to learn. Oh, I now know how to tie every game. I can never again lose at a game of Tic-Tac-Toe. I know what to do, so I'll never lose. Okay, well, so it is possible to eat through the strategy. Now, Magic happens to be a very deep game. It's modular, so a lot of it is you pick and choose what you use, and there's a lot of combinatorics, meaning a lot of cards interact with a lot of other cards. So one of the nice things is you can play and play a lot of times and keep learning from it because, you know, we are a game of, you know, 27,000 plus pieces, you know. I mean, chess is a deep game and there's 6 pieces, right? So there's just a lot you can do and there's a lot of interactions and there's a lot there. Okay, so number one, fun can be strategy. Number two, fun can be discovery. So to clarify these, there's a little bit of an overlap. What I mean by that is sometimes when you're playing, sometimes you can get yourself in a situation where you're forced to do something that you hadn't thought of before. Or it's also quite possible that I am playing and I see my opponent do something or a teammate do something. Or, you know, maybe in a multiplayer, I'm seeing, you know, other people do something. So the classic example for me, just for my own personal experiences, there's a card called Mishra's Factory. It was an Antiquities, the second ever Magic set. It was a land, and the land did 3 things. One, it tapped for a colorless mana. 2, you could tap it to make target assembly worker, +1/+1. Or 3, you can spend 1 mana and turn this land into a 2/2 assembly worker. Now, one time I'm playing my opponent and they have a Mishra's Factory on their side. So I attack, it's my grizzly bear, let's say, 2/2. They block it, then after they activate, after they make it a 2-2, they use the second ability to tap to affect itself. Now, it has blocked my creature, and it is now a 3-3 rather than 2-2. Now, back in the day when I learned this, being tapped on a block meaning you didn't do damage. But it did allow you to block a 2-2 without dying. Nowadays, you can actually block the 2-2 and kill the 2-2. But anyway, my point is, my opponent did that. I never thought to do that. All the component pieces were there, but I never thought of that. And I got very excited because I added something to my toolbox of gameplay, right? All of a sudden, because I had some decks with Misha's factors in them, my Misha's factors now got stronger because I learned something I didn't know before. And there's something really fun. Like I say, one of the things that we talk a lot about in gameplay is it's good when your opponent takes things away, when they learn something, when they say, I now know something at the end of this game I didn't know before the game. That's a very powerful thing. And that discovery is so fun because it's not just a matter that you learn it, that itself is fun, but also I now can apply it. And so, and there's overlap between strategy and discovery. A lot of times the discovery can be of strategy. But the big difference is strategy more comes from learning things as you play, where discovery, you can discover things as you play, but a lot of discovery comes from watching other people. One of the reasons it's fun to watch good players play, online and stuff, is that they will be better than you. They will do things you don't think of. And so there really is something a lot of fun of watching other players, be it your opponent in the game or just watching two people play that you're a participant of, you're a spectator. There's something really fun in sort of seeing something, understanding what you're seeing, and then applying what you're seeing. And again, there is, on some level, an iterative loop going on here. It's a little bit different. The idea essentially is that as I watch Magic, as I play Magic, as I interact with Magic, there's so much to learn, there's so much there that I get to see things and find things that I did not know. And while it is possible to learn strategy watching other people, definitely, the discovery element is very, very, there's a lot of fun in watching other people just to see what other people do. Like, I used to run the feature match areas of the Pro Tour. And the reason it was a lot of fun to watch the pros play, like, these are the best people in the world playing Magic, is I always like to figure out what they were up to, what they were doing. Like, there's a classic example where I'm at a local store, I think, and Mark Justice had come to town. So Mark Justice was the U.S. national champion in 1996. He came in third at Worlds one year. The next year, he came in second at Worlds. He has many top eights on his name. Mark Justice, in his prime, as someone who watched a lot of Magic players, was one of the best Magic players to ever play the game. I mean, there's other very talented players, but Justice had a natural flair. The story we always told is he was at a convention, and there was another card game, one he had never played. And he asked them how to play, went to a thing to learn. Later that day, took place in their sort of world championship and won it. Anyway, so the story is, I'm watching Mark Justice, and he's playing a game, and he's doing things I just don't understand. Sometimes you watch somebody, and you're like, okay, I see what they're doing. Sometimes he's just playing in a very weird way. Just in what he's doing, and he's discarding cards, he's discarding cards he could play. I'm trying to understand. And then, I don't know, six turns later, seven turns later, he finally does something in which he wins the game. And what happened was, he had looked ahead. He had figured out his route to victory. His only route to victory was this very obscure play. And so he set seven turns, setting himself up to win that way. And I, not understanding his route to victory, not understanding the win condition, I was baffled. But once I sort of understood what was going on, I'm like, wow. I really understood the idea of, look, part of what you have to do as a game player, as a Magic player, is figure out your route to victory. And then you have to, whatever that route is, you move toward that. If your route to victory is seven turns away, but that's your route to victory, that's what you do. Anyway, it's very illuminative, and it really came from just watching somebody that was really good, better than me, and sort of seeing how they did and what they did and learning from it. Okay, next up, experience. So it can be fun to, like, a lot of times there are things. So my story here is I was at the World Championship in Memphis, Tennessee. There was a new set coming out, and what we decided to do that would be fun is each of us, each R&D member that was at the event, was given a card from the upcoming set, and we were told, we were playing in a multiplayer event. What we were said is, play this card, build your deck around this card, during the game, play the card, and then just try to make as big a play with it as you can. Just make a splash. And the idea is people have never seen this card before, so, you know. So I chose a card called Kavu Chameleon that could double its power and toughness. And then I got in a mold, and then my whole deck was designed around I just making as much mana as possible. And then I got in a game where it's a very group hug game, as they say, where a lot of people were doing a lot of things that was helping other people. And so I had the ability to produce lots and lots and lots of mana. So much so that basically, I was able to make my creature have, like, power and toughness of something like 26,000 something. And I believe I had lifelink that stacked at the time. So I was able to, I think I gained like 55,000 life. And right, my whole job of that game was to show off this card. So I don't even really remember if I won or not. I think we were going to, like, I think the top two advanced, and I believe I advanced. But the point is, of the story is, anything else that happened in that game was kind of irrelevant. The point is, there was a game I played where I gained 55,000 life. Like, I remember the judges having to calculate it to figure out how much life I had gained. And that, the point is, there are things that you can do that are just exciting to do. Maybe it's just, like, for example, I used to build, I'm a very Johnny deck builder, and I used to love building decks that just won in weird ways. One of my classics is, you know, I cast Tunnel to win. Or maybe I reanimated a force in nature that I put Spirit Link on, and then I gave it to my opponent. And they won by being unable to deal with their own force of nature. That there is great glee that comes in just doing something. And what that thing is can vary. Maybe you won in a way that you didn't expect, or maybe you won in the way you did expect, but just the gloriousness of doing it was exciting. That I got to cast this giant creature, that I won with Battle of Witch, that I did something that wasn't easy to do, that maybe doesn't happen often, but I did it. I made it happen. And there's even lesser things. Sometimes it's just, here's a fun, it's just fun to play. Doubling season's fun to do. It's fun to double things. I made a deck where I doubled a lot of things. The idea of experience is that sometimes fun is, I just let people do things they want to do, that it's exciting to do. Sometimes it can be a challenge. Not always. Sometimes fun things are just, hey, it's just fun to do. And that a lot of sort of creating the fun moment is figuring out what players enjoy doing. What is fun? Okay, playing giant monsters is fun. We can do that. You know, there's, and for each of the groups, there's different kinds of fun. You know, Timmy likes big splashy things, but Johnny likes clever moments, or just, you know, having quirky things happen. Spike likes really smart moments. Like, there's a card called Fact or Fiction. So Fact or Fiction is what we refer to as a divvy card, meaning that the idea is that you have to divide your piles into two piles, and then your opponent picks which pile you keep. So there's a fun game in saying, okay, A, how do I make these two piles as equal as possible? B, how do I make the piles such that I play into who my opponent is and how my opponent plays? C, can I play into what I know about my deck and my hand, hidden information my opponent might not know? There's a lot of layers there, and that a lot of, that all the psychographics can have fun, that there's ways for them to have fun, and it really is trying to do what you want to do. Right? The Timmy, Tanny just want to do big, exciting, splashy things. The Johnnies and Jennies want to show off what they're capable of, to be clever. The Spikes want to you know, prove their dominance in the game and outplay people. And so a lot of trying to create fun experiences is just leaning in to what people fundamentally want to do. Okay, next up, social. Magic is not a solitary game. You can play on Magic Arena and play by yourself. But Magic, especially tabletop Magic, but also digital Magic, a lot of the fun of Magic is that you are not playing by yourself. You are playing with other people. And that a lot of great moments come not solely from the game itself, but how the game interacts with other people. One of the reasons Commander is a hugely popular format right now is there's a lot of fun of interacting with other people. And that a lot of times... So there's a concept I call narrative equity. I've written articles about it, did a podcast on it, talking about the value of stories. Part of that could be that, like the experience I said, maybe I did a really cool thing. But part of it could also be how I interact. So one of the stories I always tell is I'm playing Ben Hayes in Unstable. Ben was the lead developer of Unstable. I led the design. So we are playing, and in it, there is a card called Kind Slaver, which is a variant of Mind Slaver. But instead of you taking over your opponent's turn, you go get a friend. You get somebody else to make the decision for their turn. So Ben goes and gets Tim Aiden, who's one of our editors at the time. And basically, Tim comes, looks at my hand, because I'm playing Ben, and then just attacks for the win and kills Ben. And he was like, yeah, don't bug me in the future. And it's just this moment where, like, I mean, Ben laughed very, very hard. Right. There's this moment where, like, you know, the interaction between Tim and Ben, and like, there was a fun interaction. I've told that story numerous times on this podcast. And then a lot of the thing that can happen is that just the interaction, it's not, I mean, we do try to make the game to allow cool interactions. We do things like voting, and we do a lot of social mechanics where there's interplay. But there's just something about itself that the game, like, trying to do things such that the players have the way to interact with other players, that there's a lot of fun of camaraderie, fun of just we did things or how we interacted, or, you know, that there's just a lot of socialness. And that itself, the interaction with other people, can be very fun. Okay. The fifth category, I'll call it observation. Maybe it is admiration, maybe it is... but what I mean by that is there's a very fun thing of just observing things. And I will divide that into two categories. I will divide that into flavor and mechanics. So the flavor side of things is the idea that I'm playing and the flavor baked into it becomes it's something I can play with. There's a bunch of different ways that plays out. Maybe it represents something you know, but it's a fun representation of it. You know, I'm playing Throne of Eldraine, and I get the pumpkin carriage, and I get sort of our version of Cinderella, and I put Cinderella in the carriage. And that can be a lot of fun, that I did something that sort of, I matched the narrative. Or the opposite's also fun. I got Pinocchio, and I put Pinocchio in the carriage. That's not what happened at all. Or, for example, when we first started playing with vehicles back in Kaladesh, we realized that there's an opportunity where you can animate one vehicle to then animate another vehicle. And the idea is, you know, I could turn on the car, and the car could drive the train. And we really talked about, was that a good idea? Should we have that happen? And what we realized was, it just didn't happen. It wasn't the right way to play. It didn't happen a lot. But every once in a while, you just had the right combination. I have a small vehicle that I can activate that has a bigger power that lets me activate the next thing. And we're like, in a vacuum, every once in a blue moon, having your car drive your train is fun. That having things happen, you know, also a lot of times the reason we do a lot of stuff with flavor is it's neat when things line up. It's neat when I commit a crime and it really is a crime. I'm casting murder. That's a crime. That is a crime. Or it's even fun when I do something like a counterspell, you know what I'm saying? That's not a technical, like, literal in the real world crime, only because you can't counter spells. But the idea is, well, that is a crime in the game of Magic, you know, and that a lot of the experience of observing something is kind of clicking and seeing how the flavor plays in fun, interesting ways. And we spent a lot of time on the flavor end of things, trying to be careful of how we concept things, how we name things, flavor text that we want. Like, for example, just like flavor text is a great example, how I remember for a long time, one of my absolute favorite creatures to play was Lurgoyf. Just because every time I got to play Lurgoyf, I got to say, Ach, Hans, run, it's the Lurgoyf. And that there's a bonding, like that there is really a way to connect and flavor. And, you know, a lot of times, for example, like Fibblethip's a great example, where Fibblethip showed up on one card, it just was in the art. And I think we named Fibblethip in the flavor text. And that, it just became this thing people loved. And then all of a sudden, you know, people are putting Fibblethips and things all over the internet. And we ended up putting them in other sets and made all sorts of objects with him and plushies. And, you know, that there's, or Sorak punching the bear. Or, like, there's just moments that somehow supersede. And that just enjoying that moment, interplaying with that moment, interacting on the moment is a lot of fun. Now, the other thing of observation, that's sort of the flavor side of things. There is sort of the mechanic side of things. Sort of, the first side is more the Vorthos, right? It's like just having fun with all the flavor. The second side is the male side of things, which is just observing the mechanics themselves. Like, there is, what was the name? It was a Kavu that I made. And the way the Kavu worked, it was a 4-2. When it entered the battlefield, it did 2 damage to any target. And then it had Echo. And then whenever it died, it did 4 damage to any target. Well, one of the fun things about the card is, let's say, for example, I need to get rid of a creature with toughness 4 or 3. I could play this card, do the 2 damage to itself because it's a 4-2. That would make it die. I don't have to pay the Echo anymore, obviously. And it would do 4 damage. So there's this neat combination that the card, like, it's fun. One of the things that we try to do from a game design is not just build in flavorful things, but be clever in the mechanics themselves. And there's a lot of fun in watching and observing how the mechanics play out. So just like it can be fun to sort of see the flavorful thing, it can be really fun to watch and see, or even see mechanical thing, understand it, and then, you know, able to execute on it, able to show that off. And once again, the other thing to remember is there's a lot of interplay between these. That discovery can interlap with strategy, flavor can interject with social, experience can, you know, each of these can interlap. It's not as if fun is locked by itself. It's not just only strategic fun. Sometimes it's strategic and social fun. Sometimes discovery and experience. Sometimes, you know, it's observation and social. Like the different things that you can do can meld together. The core idea of today really is that if we want things to be fun, we sort of have to spend a lot of time and energy understanding when people play what they find fun about it. And one of the things we learned, so I'll use my example here from Unfinity. So Unfinity, we had a card, Wicker Picker, I think is its name. So the card got designed with Kicker Sticker. So stickers is a mechanic in the set. Kicker's mechanic goes back to Invasion. And we came up with a cool way that you gave all stickers a kicker activation. So we called it Sticker Kicker, which is an awesome name. And then once we recognized it was called Sticker Kicker for fun, we called the creature Wicker Picker. And we would do playtests, and every playtest, people would just go on and on how they love this card. I didn't even know we were going to call it Wicker Picker. We just kind of was a cutesy name. But there's something about it, about Sticker Kicker and Wicker Picker, and just, we ended up giving it flavor text where we put more ickers in it. Like, there's something about it that people really responded to. Every time we had a playtest, people were like, this is one of my favorite things. So we kept it in. You know, a lot of playtesting is going through, like, we're trying to maximize and make the mechanics the best they can be. But one of the things we also do is we observe what people enjoy. When there are moments of great strategy, of discovery, of experiences, of socialness, of observation, when any of these kinds of fun show up, we see that and we mark it and we're careful with it. That, you know, oh, that there's this flavor that we really have enjoyed, or this cool strategy moment that you get to discover, or all these different things. Like, we recognize that and we build that in. And a lot of our iterative process on our end is understanding where we might make a fun iterative process on your end. And that we are very careful of observing that. And mostly the point of today is, sort of my spiel of the day is that, more than anything else, I mean, there's a lot of reasons you play games. emotional response is one of them. I would think, in my mind, it's one of the most important. Real quickly, I like to tell the story, so I'll tell it one more time. I took a writing class when I was in college, and in the class, the teacher had us look at famous authors. We would read famous authors and stuff. At one point, she pointed out how, if you took any famous author and looked at all their work in combination, you'll find that they have a theme that runs through it. And then she said, here's the cool thing. It's not just famous writers. All writers have a theme that runs through their work. And when I looked at my work and understood, the theme that runs through my work is the idea that while we are intellectual creatures, we are actually run by our emotions. That we make most of our decisions not based on intellect, but based on emotions. And that is carried through with me, not just in my writing. I did stuff like Lego My Ego, which is it's a play. I talked about all the main characters making decisions, but it's also emotions making decisions. I made Mood Swings, which is my mass market trading card game, where you play emotions. Like, there's something really that speaks to me of the emotional experience. And as a game designer, that is what I've leaned into and realized that the ultimate experience as a game designer is you want your players to emotionally experience something. And that main thing that we're talking about today is that sense of enjoyment. It is a sense that there are other emotions we want you to do. It's not the only emotion. But the idea of enjoyment, the idea of fun, the idea that it means something what I'm doing, and it excites me in a way that makes me want to do it again and makes me really revel in what I've done. And that is an important part of gameplay. That emotional response is an important part of gameplay. And that a lot of the fun, once again, there are other emotions we evoke. It's not just enjoyment. There's things we can do that will push in other directions. But the core of it, as a game, as a piece of entertainment, is we want to entertain you. We want to make you have a good experience such that you want to come back and do that experience. For those who listen to me talk about playtesting, like when you're doing your own sets and stuff, there's nothing more important. There's nothing more valuable of having people play your game, and when the game end goes, I would like to play that game again. You leave them wanting more. You leave that the experience is so much fun, they're like, I can't wait to experience this again. And that, at its core, is really fun and building fun into the game. So anyway, guys, I'm now at work, so I hope this was insightful. This is a very complex topic, and probably I could talk ages about it. But I only get one car ride, so I hope you guys enjoyed it. But as I'm at work, we all know what this means. It means it's the end of my drive to work. So instead of talking magic, it's time for me to be making magic. Hope you guys enjoyed the fun. Hope you had fun today. And I'll see you all next time. Bye-bye.